go in to look up specific citations or, you know, to find supporting materials or whatever. But when I want to read, I want to hole up in a chair for 8 hours somewhere and read. I don't want to sit in a straight back chair in a library, which, as I say, to me, aesthetically, libraries are very, I'll be very happy when the electronic cottage concept of Toffler's comes through, you know, and we can just get the materials and have them without having to drive back and forth and go through all of the mechanics of the usual library stuff. I think a lot of people, well, you know, it's a contentious position, but I think doctoral students, particularly that I'm working with all the time, and we're primarily in the doctoral program at USC, I think many of them read in order to avoid thinking and studying. It's a flight to reality. It's a way of keeping busy and giving the impression that one is learning when one is just covering material. If you read, you can avoid thinking. It's a form of, you know, academic busyness. When I think if more people sat back and thought and did less reading, they might learn a great deal more. Read less and thought more, or read less but more thoroughly and thoughtfully. Quantitative reading doesn't impress me, and I think a lot of people do an awful lot of quantitative reading. But, you know, it depends on what you're doing. It just, in my area, you have the luxury of taking that as one approach, and that's an approach that's more congenial for my temperament. Just the mechanics of, you know, copying things I find very, very boring, and taking notes and all of that. I take a lot of them, but I generally do them on a stenderette, and, you know, take my notes from books after I have read the books and put them in files under topics where I would use them. Oh, I've got thousands of cards I will never, you know, I will never look at, I'm sure, and I wonder why I wasted all my time doing that, but that was a phase I went through when I collected materials like mad. But I really find that I think one of the tensions you run into in academic life, if you do write a great deal, if you do like to write, or you're committed to writing, is if you write 8 hours, I write like 8 hours a day. I write from 8 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock in the evening, and I don't even eat lunch. But I drink coffee constantly. And, you know, I made a rule now, I do not write on Saturdays and Sundays. I don't write on the days I'm at school, because I'm in from 8, 9 in the morning to 11 o'clock at night. And I write 3 days a week, I teach 2 days a week, but I do nothing on the weekend. And when you write all day, two things you don't ordinarily want to do a great deal when the day ends at 5 o'clock is either write or read. You need something other than words. And so I tend to, you know, if I'm preparing a book, I will hibernate and read for a couple of months. But once I start writing, I don't tend to break it and start reading if I can possibly avoid it. Unless I find holes in the manuscript when I get through, then I go back and re-research and then write the sections that need to go in. But that's a matter of individual temperament, energy level, and all that kind of thing. I burn out, and then, you know, then I read for 3 months and don't write a word. And then I hole up and write for 2 months. But I admire people that can do it half an hour, and they go to class, come back, write 15 minutes, and then, you know, meet with a student. I can't do that. If I don't have 8 hours, I might as well not start.
The things that you learned here in upper division and in your graduate year, did they hold up when you got to USC? Or maybe that isn't a fair question because you studied history and English here and education at USC, but did you find that any ideas that you'd acquired here turned out not to stand up under closer examination in graduate school?
Oh, gosh, Kay. Well, let me think. Yes and no, how's that? Well, I find that when I was here, I was awfully intellectual for the student body at Cal State Long Beach. And I was very intolerant of unstructured situations and non-directive teaching and that kind of thing. And that is something I've moved away from. I vacillate. I move back and forth. I don't have a, you know, standard position. But I'm much more tolerant, which may be a function of being getting tired. I'm not sure. I should be tolerant of some of the. I've come to suffer fools gladly, or I've become more tolerant, or some combination thereof. But I think my involvement in the revolutions when I was here as a student and as a teacher were more a function of my personality, my temperament, my impatience, than anything else. Because, you know, I did feel, you know, you can change the world on Thursday if you just do it and stop talking about it. I'm much less that way. I'm much more tolerant, although I'm not very tolerant even now, but I'm much more tolerant than I was then. I think, kind of veering away from the basic thrust of your question, I think the thing that I didn't get either at Long Beach City or at Long Beach State. And I will say, at the time I went to school, City was the better of the two. In terms of the quality of teaching and all of that. But what both City and State. I didn't have the example of inspiring people who were really doing things. Nobody was writing. Nobody was tuned in to the intellectual network. You never knew whether you were good or not because nobody was good, or you didn't know if they were good. You just didn't have a David Reisman to measure yourself up against. You didn't have whoever. I mean, you didn't have anybody even, you know, vaguely associated with a Pulitzer Prize or a Nobel Prize or, you know, a starred name in the Men of Science yearbook or whatever the case might be. And I think that students that go to school that have these people learn something very valuable, and that is that they aren't that good. And I think there are a lot of people that have gone to this college that are awfully good, that have never known they were good. And a lot of potential has gone down the drain because they assumed that somewhere there is a mystical colony of marvelous people who are infinitely superior to themselves. And that's tragic. I think people graduate from here with an inferiority complex. You know, well, I went to Cal State Long Beach, or I went to Cal State Fullerton, or I went to San Diego, and gee, you know, I know that, you know, I'm not in the same class as the people that graduated from Stanford or Claremont or, you know, wherever, or Ohio State or anywhere, you know. I think every campus needs at least a few people who are intellectually alive, who can serve as examples, even if they're bad examples. The people with reputations, people that produce, so the people can come and discover the people that write books are not magical. They don't have all of the answers. And they don't, you know, worship it because the book says it. Because they've met the man who wrote the book and they know he's a fool. Or they know he's great, you know. Whatever the case might be. They're different kinds. And that was never here. And nobody was writing. Damn few people were doing very much reading. And I think that's what people get that go to the private prep schools on the East Coast and, you know, Princeton and so on and so forth, and or UC Berkeley. And I wish we could do something about it, because a lot of the kids that end up at those schools that get in are little academic conformists who have marched to the standard drum, you know, done all the standard things and cool all of the standard examinations. They've got no exam. They've got zero imagination. They've got, you know, no tendency to do anything. I think you get more interesting people at the state colleges, but they never know that they never learn they can do it. They never have the confidence. They never feel they've been exposed to the big leagues. And I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's a damn shame. And I think that's the one thing that I did not find here or at City, and the one justification I can think of for spending, you know, $410 a unit or whatever and sending your kid to Stanford. It's not that Stanford is magical. It's not that it's got anything, but you find out, you know, whether you can do it, you find out, you know, whether you stack up. And it took me years after I got out of here, despite the fact, you know, I'm kind of characterologically self-confident, you know, I'm not very reticent. But even somebody with my lack of reticence, it took me a long time to realize I could compete with, you know, the people who were, you know, from this institution, that institution, because I was intimidated by them. They came from a different world. And I came from, you know, the world of, well, you know, we're college teachers, you know, we don't make pretensions, we don't do this, that, and the other kind of thing, and it was very comfortable, but you didn't ever get turned on by people that you really felt knew. And that to me is something that is tragic, because there are a lot of, you know, super people that have come through here and that are here now that will never know, because they're always going to think there's, you know, a mystical race of supermen that attend Harvard that they can't hold a candle to. And a lot of it is just confidence that comes from being exposed to that group, and you don't get that, unfortunately, in public schools and in the state college system. Some people transcend it, but it sure as hell isn't cultivated.
Well, I think it's changing slightly, because it's much more difficult now to leave here if you take this as your first job.
Yeah.
And go off to USC or someplace else. And so there are more people here now who planned this as a kind of way station, and who are desperately writing and doing research and doing one thing or another with the idea that someday they're going to be able to go on to one of those other
things. Well, it has. It's changed a great deal. And that's, I'm speaking off the perspective of 20 years ago. And, you know,
I guess.
No, it is changing. I know it is. And you know, there are some top flight people, but there aren't enough, even now. And it's a mixed bag. It's a very mixed bag. And but it is getting better, just because the whole thing is getting more selective. I mean, at the time I was here, as I say, it was a seller's market. I mean, they were dying to find people to teach with degrees, and now it's just the contrary. It's very, very hard to find positions and all that kind of thing, and they're beginning to push the academic image. I'm not wild about the academic image, but I do think there's something to be said for an intellectual image. Something to be said for innovation, imagination, energy, doing things, strong personalities. And the public institutions, for some reason, up until recently, you know, when the competition has begun to bring some real live people in, hasn't catered to that kind of person. They're very uncomfortable with it. The last year I was here, Seaman called me in and said, I would strongly advise you to look around for another job. because you're not temperamentally suited for this place. And he was right. Yes, I wasn't. I mean, I was absolutely, you know, out of step with the tenor.
Okay, let's